Hello, welcome back to Tab U. My name is Katrina Hindley and I'm the head of marketing of Tab. We are back for another season to educate all of our listeners on all of the really exciting things happening in the property market and the lending market and everything that comes with it. Today, season four, episode one, I am joined by two very special guests from LDS Sales Guarantee. Would you both like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Mark Roberts. I'm a relationship director. I've worked for LDS for 2 years. My background is commercial property lending for the last 20 years, working for a variety of lenders.
Perfect. I'll have to follow that. I'm Chris Fortune. I'm also a relationship director at LDS. I'm the new guy. I've been here since about April. Again, similar to Mark, background in development lending, worked with lenders, been a broker myself for many, many years up until the wonderful crash of 08-09 when the markets seemed to disappear a little bit. But since then, been lending, development, commercial. So here we are, and I've landed now at LDS.
Very excited to have you on board. Thank you. Also joined by a special guest from Tab. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, Ellie Corman. I've been here before, Chief Investment Officer and Head of Development Finance.
So same format as last time or previous seasons. We're going to be asking you the top five questions people have been asking, and we will kick things off with question number one, quite simply. What is a property sales guarantee?
Okay, so a property sales guarantee is an upfront commitment from us at LDS to purchase all units across the scheme at a guaranteed discount. So it basically totally removes sales risk for a development lender and a developer themselves, because they are sure at the conclusion of that scheme, any unsold units, we would guarantee to buy them at a certain level, typically at about 20% discount against red book valuation. We exchange contracts up front with the developer, and they have a benefit of our 10% deposit, which they can use in conjunction with the senior debt from the likes of Tab, and it reduces their equity contribution towards that scheme. The key element is the developer always retains the autonomy to sell them on the open market, achieving their maximum returns.
How does it work? I mean,
well, we like to say we keep it as simple as possible, as always. It works, obviously. Applications come from multiple sources. They come direct from the developer, from a broker, even from a lender themselves who have seen the LDS product and the benefits. And it's a simple case of just going online or giving us a call. We'll talk through the development, talk through the pros and cons, and very quickly, very simply provide them with a sales guarantee. It's indicative, it's early doors, but they can go online, generate it straight away. That gives them exactly what we will offer on day one. They can then obviously use that when they're in discussions with the lender or to work on their own figures, make sure it works and makes it stack up. And it's been incredibly popular. I think, what was it, sort of over 400 million last month alone in sales guarantee applications on our system. So it's showing its worth, certainly as we know in the current climate, the way things have been over the last sort of month or two since the wonderful mini budget.
Well, indeed. How is it that you guys are able to purchase any old unsold apartments or flats or houses?
So our parental company, as part of the group, is we're part of Landmark Group, which is in its third decade property investment company. Typically purchasing historically ground rents, but within that business, obviously, it's a multi-million pound balance sheet, so they have great access to institutional funding lines, which basically provides the lenders and the developers with the comfort that we have the ability to purchase them should they be called upon when they're not sold.
And is the appetite from Landmark Group on residential only? Is it flats? Is it houses? Is it refurbishments? Is it new builds? What is the principal product there?
Predominantly, we don't get involved with commercial, because obviously at the end stage is one of the options is obviously us taking on board those properties and absorbing them probably into the Landmark Group. So commercial we take out of the scheme. We can still do it, for instance, many commercial units on the ground floor, apartments and flats upstairs. We'd take the commercial unit away. But it is residential, flats and or apartments, as long as they are with full planning. We don't do anything with permitted development, anything with PDR. And at the moment, it's also affordable. Any affordable units, we discount those from the scheme. So again, very simply, somebody doing 20 flats, 5 are affordable. We just work off the 15. Broadly speaking, simple criteria, anything from 5 units up to 60 units, yeah. £1.5 million GDV, up to £35 million GDV, anywhere in England, Wales. We'd love to do Scotland. Mm. It'd be an option for us, but the legalities of exchanging in Scotland and then not being the purchaser are slightly different. So it's a bit of, it's a bit of a learning curve for us. We've got to move into that.
And do you have a minimum value of an apartment size? So in other words, if someone was building apartments in Knightsbridge, where you might have each apartment's worth £4-5 million, would that still fit into an LDS sales guarantee?
So, interestingly, the way this moves probably onto the way we're secured. So we're secured via the warranty providers who provide the new build warranty against the projects, and we rely on the developer having insolvency cover within that warranty provider, which provides our entire security package, because we're not putting our money in as debt. It actually goes in as exchange money, so we're onward purchasers. So we're protected. Our deposits are protected by the insolvency cover within the warranty. But unfortunately, that maxes out at £1 million per unit. £1 million units, which is a £100,000 deposit. So we can't go over and above that level of an individual unit. So our criteria is we max out at £1 million per unit on a housing and 750,000 on apartments. In terms of Knightsbridge, the only criteria on the apartments is we don't get involved in city centre schemes, high rise flatted schemes, where there's a lot of competitiveness and the market's a lot more fluid on the rental side. So it's something we're not willing to take a risk on currently. So we will do suburban apartment schemes and housing schemes across the whole of England and Wales.
Do you think that you would? That's it, there's a future for that.
The one thing we always say is
never say never.
We never want to become like a tick box criteria sort of led outfit, because that's just you need to be agile and move with the amount of time. So never say never.
Yeah. Well, if we move on to main question number two, what are the benefits and considerations of a sales guarantee?
From our point of view, or from a developer lender point of view?
I guess if we do both, and let's start with a developer lender. So I'm looking at sales guarantee. What can I benefit from? What should I consider? And then we'll go from your.
I suppose as a developer, one of the main benefits is, as Mark alluded to, is the additional cash funding early doors and day one. Now, obviously, as far as we are as a company, we can only work in conjunction with the main development lender. So it's important to note that obviously we don't work independently. So obviously, if a developer was looking just, say, for instance, to initially purchase land, and there was no onward development lender on board, we wouldn't be able to assist in that, because obviously we're exchanging on properties that are going to be built. So we work in conjunction with the main lender, with guys like yourselves at TAB, and we literally, the developer obviously is getting that benefit of that cash, which dramatically reduces their own contribution on day one, massively deleverages it. So typically, for instance, on a GDV of £10 million, a developer may be looking to put in, say, about 1.2 million of their own funds on day one. Or with the LDS scheme on board, we would typically be giving them 800,000 as a cash deposit on those properties. So that dramatically reduces from, say, 1.2 million to, say, 400,000, something like that. So that's a massive, massive effect on, because you know what developers are like, they're the most wonderful people in the world. Every scheme is going to be the best scheme.
Most cash strapped people in the world.
The most cash strapped people. They have a different calendar cycle. I think they're somewhere like on Venus or on Mars, where they think that 12 months is really 6 months and 18 months is really 12 months. And they always come and say, we'll be out in 12, Chris, don't worry, and we'll sell everything, don't worry. And, you know, so for them to be able to have that sort of, they either come into, as you said, you know, they either come into the stage of they're a little bit short of cash, or they've got a lot of cash, but they don't want to particularly use it. They want to stay liquid. And that's obviously where the benefit comes. Now, going back sort of 5 or 6 months, developers would never consider the sales guarantee, because they're always thinking, I'm going to sell everything. And that's great. But I think now, as the market's slightly sort of changing and there's a little bit more caution out there, developers are now generally looking at the benefits of the front end and the back end as one sort of joined up business. So I think from a developer, is that extra cash that we can, because obviously with that cash, it can totally change the schedule, can totally change the plan for the build. They might have had sufficient cash to maybe do 4 units or 5 units on a scheme, or now they can crack on and do 8 or 9. And obviously everyone knows, you know, time is risk, and if you can be speeding up that process, injecting more cash at the front end, I think it's brilliant for everyone.
The whole model was aimed at supporting SMEs to grow quicker. If you look at what it does to their return on investment by the reduction in capital that they're actually required, it actually probably trebles it. And we can prove that via, you know, on the website, there's examples of that actually happening. And interestingly, probably from a lender's perspective as well now, we're starting getting a lot more inquiries from lenders who are becoming, as the market softened, and becoming more acutely aware of the sales risk on schemes and actually the benefit we bring to the scheme, and it totally removes their sales risk. So it is really beneficial to lenders and developers alike.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, you know, we go back to some of the earlier podcasts we did in the previous season talking about development finance. There's two main risks on development finance, and that is the ability of the developer to build out that project, but then, as with any lending, the exit. Mm-hmm. And what you guys are offering is a bit more security and surety on the exit, effectively, which is valuable for any lender.
Yeah. And again, more market fluctuations as they are, you know, we are contracted at that day one GDV. So again, one of the great benefits for a developer, putting aside the cost, because there's always costs involved, and you know what developers like, it's like, ooh, it's a fixed cost. You know, unlike other forms of borrowing, you know, whether it's a 12-month deal or a 18-month deal, you know, those costs are nailed on day one. So for whatever a developer wants, they know that they've got those costs in the bank. There's no fluctuations. It's a fixed cost. So again, that brings more certainty, every time they're looking at doing a development.
And what kind of challenges what do I need to consider when, you know, sounds amazing, but what is it that I should be like, oh, this is where it might not work for me, I guess, or does it work for all developers?
So the only reason it wouldn't work for a developer is if their sales strategy fails. That's in reality should be highly unlikely, because they've had a red book valuation which confirms market absorption, that they should be selling for that pound per square foot. So they've got that all correct in their appraisal. So the only stage it could perhaps become prohibitive for a developer is they've not sold any of the units and they end up selling to us at the agreed 20% discount. But would that be a bad result for them in the market? Probably not, because if they've not sold them at that level, they may have even have to go further down the price chain. But that, if they sell to us at 80%, they're probably getting their capital back and not making any profit on the scheme.
So would you say that, you know, from your perspective, the contract is that you would buy all the apartments within the development, but the sweet spot for a developer is maybe to use you for a few of them, just to lock in some of that cash flow early, and also to know that they've got some of those sales, but sell as many on the market, and then there's this equilibrium of staying in the project for too long, which costs more money, and getting out too early at a discount.
So the way our money is structured and the pricing it's structured at, so it goes in as a deposit. There's 0% interest charged against that money for the duration of the term. As each one sells on the open market, the developer pays us a small fee for not purchasing and having the benefit of our money. We purposely make that fee on a ratchet basis so that once they achieve sellout, they pay that smallest fee. If they don't sell them all, they pay a slightly larger fee. So it encourages the developer through the life cycle to continue with the sales. Our process on this is not property acquisition related. We want to churn the cash. So we purposely price it that way to encourage the developer to sell them. And if it gets to the point where actually the developer's only sold, say, 50 to 60% of stock on site, they still retain the ability to say, actually, I'm still comfortable with this sales process and I don't want to sell to LDS. They can go down the developer exit route, bridge route, repay our deposit, pay us the small fee, and we're away. They don't have to necessarily sell them all. There's still the options to refinance, pay our deposit back at the same time the development lender gets paid back on a development exit bridge.
Yeah. I mean, our goals are the same as pretty much any development lender. We want developers to succeed, to be in, to build, to be out, move on to the next one. And that's where we see ourselves. That's what we're, everything we emphasise with the developers is probably the same as you guys at TAB. You want to be in and out, get paid again, move on to the next one. And that's where we want to be. You know, we have that sales guarantee in place if it's required, but it really is, for us, it's like a nuclear option. Because as Mark said, there's no way if a developer's building 20 flats and they've sold 15 or 16, they're not giving us four. You know, they're just not, you know, because as we said, they've always got that bridge to exit, retain as part of a buy to let if they want to, as part of a portfolio or you know, or extend. So, you know, we want that. We're always very keen to emphasise that's where we want them to go as well.
So, this is how I think I've figured out what LDS sales guarantee is. Is it, so I am a property developer, I've got 5 properties and I will say to you, they're worth £1 million each property. So I've got £5 million. You're going to give me 500 grand up front, which is the deposit. And then I would say to you, I would like that for a year. And if I don't sell these properties in a year, you can either have them or I'll then get a development bridging lender to pay off the 500 grand I owe you with the fees, blah, 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 blah. And then they're my properties to sell.
Correct, but the level of deposit is slightly different.
Okay. But
yeah, so you get the benefit of our deposit.
Yeah.
And we typically marry that up with the senior debt. So yeah. It's normally a build plus 6 to 9 months marketing period. Yeah.
And again, we would also marry up with, obviously we rely on the lender's Red Book valuation, the lender's QS reports, the IMS reports, because there's no point us instructing our own valuation from a different value because that's just a recipe for disaster. You know, so the development lender comes in at $1.2 million, ours come in at $1.4 million. It's like, oh dear.
Yeah.
So, and obviously, from a simpler point of view, is that it keeps the process as simple as possible. We're just reliant on your guys for your development valuation in Red Book. That's our figures too. You know, the QS reports, the IMS reports. There are your figures and our figures. So we work together, you know, with you.
So moving on to question number 3, which ties in quite nicely, is what stage of the process would someone obtain a sales guarantee?
Okay, so as early in the development life cycle as possible, on our website, which is www.ldsyoursite.com, a developer, a broker, a lender can log on to that and generate an instant sales guarantee. It's literally a tab on the website. You input the scheme details, and within 2 minutes, it will feed back to you, almost like a decision in principle from a lender, exactly where our terms would be. It outlines the GDV, the guaranteed level of purchase, and the level of deposit, and the fee structure. And what we suggest then is a developer or a broker goes away and furnishes the development lender with that and say, this is the scheme I'm looking to do. Could you please give me some terms with you working alongside LDS? And at that point, we generally have a all party call with the lender, broker, developer, all agree a structure to the transaction, and then that moves on to then valuation instruction from the lender. We get receipts of that. That confirms the figures that we're working towards, you're working towards, and then the legal side all
marries
works in together. We're in a position to exchange contracts when you're in a position to lend the money.
And would you say as well, much like a lender adjusts their set of terms based on the responses back from the valuer and the QS as well, likewise you would adjust your terms if the valuation came in a little bit higher or a little bit lower and the QS said the costs were a bit higher or the time was a bit longer, you would adjust your terms following the initial terms in principle?
So what you typically find is if the costs have gone up by the QS, then that has an impact on GDV and probably residual land value. Residual land value is not really of a concern to us because we're only agreeing to purchase them at the end values. So wherever that GDV lands, we would apply our discount against that Red Book valuation.
So you're more focused on the valuation result rather than anything else. So
the construction risk isn't really
our
concern.
Yeah. Would you monitor a project along with a lender as it's going along from a time perspective? Do you require the reports to be sent to you monthly or on each drawdown? Or do you just switch off and wait for the developer to phone you and say, right, I'd like to use you guys because I'm ready to sell?
We're very much hands-on with that. So we will do our own site visits. We will go and you know, be a part of the whole process. But yes, we will rely on you to supply us with copies of any of the QS reports as they come through. We will obviously monitor the build and how it's progressing. Because again, although the middle part, we're not too hung up about, we do want to make sure it's on time. We do want to make sure they're within the construction period and they're not into the runoff period, into the long stop, and making sure we are monitoring that at all times. So it's sort of hands on but hands off at the same time, if that makes sense.
The good part of it from the lender's perspective is we also get engaged in the sales, way up to in the sales process, what marketing tools you know implying, and we can introduce them to people we know within the in the network that might help them if sales are slightly slower than they're anticipating. So, I mean, we do sort of fade into the background to some degree, but we're still there and hands-on and as involved as, you know, a lender or the developer would want us to be.
And just from kind of a TAB's perspective, would this come in as part of our underwriting processes when we'd start having this kind of group call, or could it be in that initial terms?
Well, I think it would be in all stages. If somebody had gone onto LDS's website and produced a set of terms in principle, then that's something that should be shared with our sales team straight away. It's absolutely something the underwriting team will get stuck into and understand as well, because it impacts on the GDV. For example, if they are selling to LDS at a 20% discount to the market, we would have to take that into account and make sure that there's still enough margin there to repay the senior lender. So it does come under all the underwriting, and from a legal perspective as well. You know, the documentation has to tie in and marry in. And effectively, you know, LDS are a lender. They're a different form of lender. Yeah. So any lenders on a particular asset have to be working together to make sure for the best outcome, so we're all happy at the end of the day. And as you said, get the money back and churn it out again.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess how quickly, obviously, you know, we've had experience of turning around bridges very, very quickly. I know with development it's got other challenges that we need to address. How quickly could someone, you said kind of it's as simple as logging on, putting in your details, bam, offer in principle. What kind of legal process needs to go alongside it, or is there I guess timescales, how quickly could I become a developer, have five units and then get my cash?
So
as well as the cash from the lender.
I'll caveat this with it's as fast as said developer's legal team can go. I mean, we've got our legal team geared up. There's a standard contract that we can quickly implement and get that over to the developer's solicitors for signing and et cetera and returning. But it's also dependent on where they're at in terms of the general conveyance. You know, what searches have they got? How quickly can we get all that information back? But we have done them in a couple of weeks, and we have done them in 6 months. It's totally deal by deal specific.
It is. I mean, we won't sit on anything. We are very proactive.
Yeah.
But we can only react, and it's the same for everybody, as fast as the information comes back to us. And I always try to sort of explain sometimes that if we ask 10 questions and we get 10 answers, that might result in 12 questions, you know. So there is always an ever decreasing circle. So we will absolutely work on that as fast as we can get the questions back. You know, no point sort of, you know, ask for some information. It takes 3 weeks to come back, and then the bloke on the other end of the phone saying, oh, "Can we complete tomorrow?" So, well, hang on a minute, I haven't heard from you for 3 weeks. But that's just the same for everybody. It's
the same challenges that we have in our bridging lending or development finance lending, where the underwriters can have a set of questions, and the quicker the responses come back and the more full those responses, the quicker you can turn around the next set of questions, and as you said, the diminishing set of questions until there are no further questions.
Yes, that's it.
So how would someone going about attaining a sales guarantee, are there other, not obviously a direct sales guarantee, but are there other kind of options out there, I guess, as a general, obviously there's a million and one lenders.
Yeah.
Are there other sales guarantees, or is it, do you call it something else?
So as far as
we can know
there aren't at the moment that there are no other sort of opportunities out there for anyone to get an alternative sales guarantee.
So the steps would be speak to you guys, fill out the form, get your terms, present them to the lender
or broker.
He'll then get everyone together, chat, underwrite, all sign on the dotted line at the same time.
I mean I would see us working simultaneously alongside the lenders, and it's very much a partnership between us and our lenders.
Sounds seamless.
Who
do you work for then, the lender or the property developer?
Both.
Do you know what's so wonderful sometimes is that if we have, for want of a better thing, another night out, you know, literally round table stuff. You see like 12 a week at this time of the year. I think we're one of the few companies that can sit in the middle and have a table with three lenders, four brokers, two developers, And it's a lovely balance, because we are genuinely sitting in between the broker, the developer, the lender, to provide a service that hopefully knits them all together. So we can be everyone's friend. You know, sometimes I wear a broker hat when I'm talking to a lender because I think they're moving a bit slow, and I empathise with the broker. Sometimes I empathise with the lender because the broker's not provided them anywhere near the information that we thought they would. Yeah. So we have to know to be able to sort of sit. I mean, from us, I mean, I'm sure the same for Mark. We're relationship directors. I always have one foot in the LDS camp and one foot in either the broker or the developer, because it's our job to get those deals together, get those deals through, and get them paid out, and wait for credit committee to have their usual fun time.
It was interesting because we did the FP show, and we're actually next. I think we're on a stand pretty much adjacent to you guys, and
absolutely.
You know, there's a lot of traction at your stand. It was really interesting to see what was going on with the podcasts, etc. But what we get when people come to our stand at those sort of shows is, this is strange, I've never seen this before, and like where they're walking around the room as a broker, that sort of environment, and there's 30 different lenders in a room, and it's like, what's your leverage, what's your cost, etc. Where with us it's pretty unique, and it is totally brand new to the market.
It's interesting stuff. And I guess, can I use LDS in my own property transactions personal, or is it only for like bigger developers? Or developers? I'm not a developer. Could Ellie use it?
Well, let's rephrase the question. If I'm selling a house and I wanted to guarantee the sale of the house, would you take that sale on so that I could go and buy my next house and I can, at least I know it's secure?
We wouldn't do it on a sort of on a retail basis. This is a commercial basis, and obviously it's 5 units is the minimum, and we really do require it as often as possible to be at the ground up level, to, you know, the early days, because obviously if there's already a lender on board, there's always a charge in place. It's very difficult to sort of back engineer for us to become part of that process with intercredit agreements and build warranties. So ideally, you know, we've got plenty where it's the second phase. The first phase has been and gone and out, and we got involved with the second phase because that's fine. It's technically, it's a separate transaction really. But obviously from a retail point of view, as it would be, then no, we want to be 5 units minimum from early doors. We're happy to look at conversions. It's not just ground up, but it must have full planning.
Yeah.
That's the crucial thing. So if somebody's doing an office conversion, 1970s office block, 40 houses, 40 flats, invariably a lot of times it's, oh, it's permitted development, but I've got full planning for a bike shed.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a bin store. Well, no, that, unfortunately, that's not for us.
Yeah. Well, moving on to question number 4. What are the current challenges for SME house builders and lenders?
Well, you can have this one.
Well, I mean, there's probably more so in the last couple of months than there has been for the last probably decade. I mean, obviously there's the planning process, which is so sticky, still sticky. The government are going to have to get involved and improve that somehow. And then moving on to more probably current, there's been the cost increases that a lot of developers that were, you know, appraising schemes 18 months ago have just experienced not only a shortage of stock, but a shortage of staff. The cost of raw materials has gone up, so they've seen a massive shift in terms of the costs. But fortunately, during that period, probably the last 12 months, that the market has been going the right way in terms of values increasing. Mm-hmm. So the margins haven't been diminished a great deal. Now, obviously, that's started to soften. So we'll see. I mean, there's no real data on it yet, so we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. I mean, there's a couple, and then obviously there's the increased costs in terms of the interest rate rises that we've had recently, so the borrowing's become more expensive. The affordability for people that, you know, have committed to purchase stock from the schemes where they've put reservation fees down, are those sales going to still be there when it comes to practical completion, because will the mortgage office still be there for these purchases? It's all very interesting. There's no real sort of data on it yet to actually say yes or no, but there's definitely a general softening in the market.
With all the things that you've mentioned, really the key one for you at LDS is house prices.
Yeah,
effectively, and, you know, just looking sort of some of the news today, we're talking about actually month on month drop in house prices for the first time in a while. How do you guys consider and manage internally the risks in terms of, you know, you're viewing it, you're going to take a discount to the market value.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, the market value comes down. You can still take your discount to the same market value, but then that invariably squeezes the developer and the senior lender and things like that. What are your discussions you're having internally about that?
Well, I suppose that everything we do is very much on a cyclical basis. So, you know, our money goes in on day one. It could be anything from 18 months, say, to 24 months before they start to see sales. So the risk for us is minimal because it might only be, say, a couple of developments. As everything moves forward, 2 months down the line, we're doing other developments. 3 months down the line, we're doing more developments. So when it comes to the sort of the end point, as you rightly said, our business model isn't going to change. It's going to be at that 20% discount of the GDV. But in 6 months' time, what's the GDV going to be? But we're still going to be at 20% now. You know. So for us, there is a minimal risk. And it's important for people to realise that because there's always that credibility in what we do. You know, a lot of our money is going out on day one. That ticks the box credible-wise straight away. If we're giving 800,000, £1 million to a developer on day one, our money's in probably for 18 months, maybe 24 months. So we think, for instance, that there's a, I think I saw a report last week that that there might be an 8%, something like an 8% drop. Who knows? I haven't got a crystal ball. 8% drop in say, house prices, say, 22, 23. Well, if you think about 8%, that only takes us back to what house prices were in 2021. So, you know, there has been such a massive increase in house prices. Was that artificial based on the lower levels of stock in the availability? So it forced the price up. But if we look at 8% and it takes us back to where it was in 21, it's, you know, maybe it's a normal readjustment. I don't know.
I agree with the concept of the normal readjustment and much the same discussed with interest rates. You know, we've been 10 years at very low rates and this is probably a readjustment back to what should be normal. But just coming back to sort of the point you mentioned about the GDV and effectively the red book value. So if the market is changing quite swiftly as it is and we're expecting maybe an 8 to 10% drop in the house of in property prices over the next 12 months or so, if you're in a project for 18 to 24, do you require a updated red book valuation at some point through the project? Or, I mean, as a development lender, we generally don't do that until the end of the project. If they're looking for an extension, then we would do. Yeah. But we're okay with it. We take on our risk and we manage that risk in terms of LTV and LTGDV as well. But how do you guys view that if everything is pinning on the GDV?
So we'd be exactly the same as you in terms of your initial due diligence process. We have a great investment committee. I won't mention how many years between us, but there's probably lots of people, including non-exec directors, who have real experience of the market. So we get comfortable at the front end. As I mentioned to you earlier, throughout the process, we're in monthly dialogue with each developer, where you're up to in the sales process, what's come in, what levels of reservations have you had, what level of deposits have you had in terms of exchanges. So we have a very clear sight across the portfolio of what's sticking, what's not, and where do we need to get involved. And we know that risk that we take on front end, and we manage and monitor that very closely throughout the entire process.
Yeah. And how did you guys come up with the idea? Where did it come from? How did LDS Sales Guarantee?
Neither of us could take credit for it. So our CEO, Mark Hawthorne, who is actually the COO of Landmark Group, saw an opportunity in terms of the warranty and the way we could put our money in as a deposits and have them secured by the warranty provider. He's very keen on supporting SMEs, enabling them to grow, and it was a great way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And funnily enough, I came across the product when I was at my last job and I did the first sales guarantee in the UK, which was really interesting. I saw it and thought, well, what an amazing product. Yeah. Why hasn't it come to market? And having a chat to Mark, it was quickly established that the lender route and the broker route and the developer route was the best route to market. Mm-hmm. So that's going back 2 years now. We've had a fantastic couple of years.
Yeah, obviously. How many projects, I guess, or sales guarantees have you offered, if you can disclose that figure?
So, it's proven very, very popular. I mean, I wouldn't like to disclose it, obviously, sort of in this format.
Of course.
Sure. But as I mentioned earlier, the guarantees wise, you know, obviously the conversion rate will be smaller, but it's over about 2 billion
of inquiries.
Yeah. Now, don't we're never going to be converting at that, even if we try to convert at that level. That was never. But you know, we can be at a nice, healthy 4-5%
Maybe conversion we'll ask an easier question then. What's the most unusual project you've seen that you've given? I guess so that people who might have unusual projects as well.
Do you know what? I don't think they're necessarily unusual. We do see some obviously applications from certain developers who have got interesting. They're interesting people, and we've you know, and the developments on the whole tend to be quite. They tend to be quite straightforward. They really do, because I think for us, if we're looking at say a minimum of 5 units, certainly if it's in 5 houses, we get obviously the same questions that get asked. Will you look at a developer who's got no experience or something like that? And well, part of the answer to that question is, will the main lender look at a developer who hasn't got a lot of experience? We see lots of people who have built hundreds of houses for other people. There's no doubt about their ability to knock a house up and to make it fantastic, but they've never signed on the dotted line themselves. That look in their eyes when they're the ones responsible for talking to the planning department, to the architects. I've seen it over many years where a developer has had, you know, as a builder, they've had the kitchens delivered, they've had the window frames, they've had everything delivered, and it's been fine. But all of a sudden, they want a Silverstone granite worktop. They want, you know, top of the range window frames. And you're trying to say to them, look, you've built 300 houses. What are you doing? And that white light fever. So there is a lot where, you know, the developers are maybe stretching themselves a little bit. Yeah.
Addresses are sometimes quite funny rather than schemes. How's the street ever been allowed to be named? I can't think of a specific example without being too rude.
Who's it? There's the Prime Top Gear who are doing a road trip along all the funny names from John O'Groats all the way to Land's End and stopping off at all the rude streets on the way. So it looks quite funny.
Yeah, there's a few of those around. There are some strange development names where you think they're not going to stick with that name for the development, surely. I think almost something like Skunk Row or something like that. And you think, no, surely that,
as a marketer,
as a marketing,
sure
you've got to change that. You know, sort of like Abattoir Street or something like that. So, yeah.
Just come back to a point you said about. You mentioned much earlier on that you cover the whole of England and Wales.
And Wales, yeah.
So have you seen projects all the way up north on the Scottish border, all the way down south to Plymouth and...
Northumberland to probably Exeter, and maybe even beyond, further down that southwest coast.
Yes, yeah.
Devon, Cornwall.
The whole lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we don't have any postcode restrictions in England, apart from, as Mark was saying, that sort of speculative city centre high-rise. That's incredibly sort of, you know, saturated market. That's the kind of thing we would avoid. But other than that, you know, it's literally give us a postcode and it's absolutely fine.
Pembrokeshire closed everywhere, yeah.
All right. Well, moving on to question number 5. Was going to be, how has this sector changed within the last decade? But maybe we should just go back two years.
Or two months. Yeah.
Well, what has become definitely a lot better in the last decade is, I mean, in the 2007-08 crash, developers would have had nowhere to go for the funding. Whereas now there's such a wide variety of alternative new lenders out there. TAB's a perfect example that, you know, the market has become a lot more competitive in the development finance arena, which can only benefit the developers themselves, as, you know, the experience and the opportunities that they have to go to development lenders like yourselves. I think that's been a huge change in the last 10 years, whereas historically, you know, the top 4 banks would just close the doors and they had nowhere to go, whereas that doesn't happen. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of lenders that are reassessing the situation and their criteria at the moment, and whilst they do that, there's other opportunities for the lenders to pick up those.
And I think there's generally been a general increase in the professionalism and the diligence and the fortitude of a lot of the development lenders now. You know, as Mark said, I remember going back to 2007-08 where literally lenders just disappeared overnight, and it was the lenders that had always had that proper sort of due diligence basis of lending correctly at the right loan to value at the right rate. They weren't overstretching themselves. We've all seen it where there's this cliche, the race to the bottom, where to just create more business, the loan to values go up and the rates drop, and it's not sustainable. It just isn't. It's great for a broker, great for a client who can get a deal like that, but long term, it's just not going to work. So it's great to see, sort of, as you say, you know, more professional lenders coming in. But one of the things I've noticed over the last 10 years is the massive increase in things like the more modern methods of construction, and, you know, off-site construction. I think lenders sometimes are a little bit not slow and not wary, but correct in a way, because obviously it totally changes the funding for a development. You know, the old-fashioned days of bricks and mortar, slabs going up and a linear build where you could see, you know, the footings going in, the damp course, the wind and everything. But now with, you know, developers are now in a situation where 200 grand is going off-site to some third-party company who's going to build something somewhere in Norway and put it on a barge and bring it over, or, you know, and how does that change the risk profile for a development lender when they're thinking that now they're not looking at the developer, they're also looking at their suppliers in more, in, you know, I'm giving him £500,000, you're going to give them £500,000, well, who are they? You know, and I think that's a challenge for you more.
Absolutely, and we've had a few schemes where we've actually looked at modern methods of construction and, you know, the ways we were looking to get comfortable with that, sending £500,000 to Norway as such, was we would enter into a contract directly with them rather than via the developer so that we had more control. But you still have the developer's element of risk, and that is their experience in doing these things. And, you know, if you try and put on a, you know, if you take your normal methods of construction, if somebody made a mistake with a measurement slightly, you can adapt it and adjust it quite easily on site. It might cost you, it might be frustrating, but it can be done. If you're doing something modular and you've got a steel that's going all the way up, but you put it in the wrong place by a millimetre, then all the five stories that you've ordered from Norway have to be sent back because they don't fit. So it comes with different risks. I think it's very early days for that. It's much better for large house builders who are putting these things on the ground up, and rather than a new developer, you know, you spoke about new developers and people who have built hundreds of schemes for other people but nothing for themselves yet. I think it's a different type of risk. They have to understand the product better. I think it's still very, very early days, but I have no doubt, you know, we could be sitting here in 25 years time and start seeing real success in MMC.
I think so, because there's always been the prejudice. I mean, going back years when people talk about like Wimpy No Fines and Mundick Stone in the West Country and things like that, and I always laugh about timber frame construction. Well, you only have to go over to Europe and, you know, talk about Norway. My brother lives in Sweden. He lives in a house that's 600 years old. It's timber. You know, there's nothing falling down about that house, but there's always been that whole thing, oh, timber frame. But I think we've got to move on, certainly with things like heating and cost of you know, just basically, you know, heating the homes and gas and electric, and with modern methods you've got much better levels of EPC, much better, you know, and it makes a real difference now, certainly to the next generation coming along. It's a real important part of their purchasing and their choice in a property now, that I think they need to embrace it.
I agree with you, and I think, you know, to crack the energy efficiency in the usual way we build the buildings is quite a challenge. I think we're probably very close with modern methods of construction to make it super efficient. And I agree, as people look to buy homes and housing that is extremely efficient, then we'll be pushed into the direction of modern methods of construction a little bit more.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, you answered my where do you see it going? I guess let's end on what does the future look like for LDS Sales Guarantee?
Well, I think we've had a brilliant sort of first couple of years, and I'd say the future is about building and harnessing relationships with lenders like TAB, continuing to work with the developers that we've supported over the last 2 years. There are other aspects of the sales guarantee that we're looking at perhaps changing and bringing forward, one of which is a 0% deposit.
Exciting.
Which would basically allow a lender to put our sales guarantee in place at a much smaller cost, where the developer's still involved. We're still not quite there yet with that. There are other things, going back to what we've just discussed, could there be a green product where it becomes a little bit cheaper if developers are more carbon neutral, schemes are more carbon neutral. But there's plenty of ways we can tailor the product and, you know, look to support it, and just building on the initial 2 years' success.
Yeah, we can't stand still. You know, we're a young company. Apart from me and Mark, are relatively young people within that company. And it is a case of being on your toes all the time and looking at the market. And they always say it's easy to make small adjustments and make them regularly than to sit around and wait mm-hmm. too long and then try and turn the oil tanker around. You know, we are light and nimble and we're going to continue to be so. So they'll watch out for new products, watch out for new angles. You know, we're always thinking.
And you mentioned it earlier, but where can our listeners find you guys? I will put this all in the show notes as well. But
so our website, www.ldsyoursite.com. You'll find all details there. There's all sorts of stuff. There's mine and Chris's contact details.
Yeah.
There's case studies. There's all sorts of literature and information.
Excellent. Well, thank you all for joining me. Hope you've enjoyed it. That has been season 4, episode 1. I have to remember that. LDS Sales Guarantee. Looking forward to seeing you next time. Thanks, Juan, and thanks all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.